Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Welcome back, my friends, once again to that show that keeps on giving, that gift that keeps on giving to you, that accidental systems administrator out there, or that person that works on servers every day of the week and networks and all things connected. Yes, welcome back to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 72 for November the 25th, 2014. I'm your host, Jack. I'm going to guide you through all that magical connected stuff that you have out there. Fiber optics, Cat 5, Cat 6, man, switches, networking gear, servers, and all things that we have to deal with every day of the week. Folks, this show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Check it out at techpodcast.com. This show is also being syndicated now through Stitcher.com. You can check that out, and it's a place to pick up this show as well as many other podcasts out there. A lot of podcasts on Stitcher. You might want to check them out. Download that app today to your favorite smartphone, be that a iPhone, or it could be, you know, it could be an Android phone. Whatever your favorite smartphone is, they have an app for you over there at Stitcher.com. Check out this website at tipsfromtheserveroom.com where you can comment on these shows, and I hope that you do. You can also leave me a voicemail or your questions or whatever you may have at 724-701-0550. That's 724-701-0550. And we will play that on a future show. Get your voice heard, folks. Get your questions heard. There's never a dumb question. I always hate when people say, well, Jack, I would have called in, but yeah, it sounds kind of silly to ask this question. There's no silly questions. There's no bad questions. They're all good. And we're here to try to help you work your way through those. If you have any questions or ideas for future shows, I'd love to hear from you and help me out here to set up some future shows for some folks. You can email me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter. Many of you have, and I thank you for that. That is at Technoman, T-E-C-H-N-O-M-A-N, Technoman. I was thinking about some topics that we have not covered much during these podcasts, and I wanted to talk to you tonight about Office 365. More than that, I think I want to talk to you about Exchange 365. You know, we all have, and I'll tell you at the end of the show in a wrap-up, I have some notes here for you, but we all have some sort of email servers that we're running, and I thought that it would be nice to know how we can maybe figure a way to migrate our Exchange servers that we have in our networks now and migrate those to Office 365. And you might say, Jack, why would you be talking about this? You're a Google Apps man. Well, traditionally in our environment, yes, we do use Google Apps. And if you are in the education realm, I would suggest that you look at Google Apps, but also look at Office 365. Especially if you have Exchange servers, you may want to use just the Office 365 Exchange part where you can actually, you know, let them host your servers. And we'll talk about that here in a little while. Now, the notes I use for tonight, I will be sharing the link with you on the show notes. So if you go to tipsfromtheserveroom.com after you listen to this podcast, when you get to your office, you can click on that link and you know, read the highlights. If you miss anything as you're riding in your car, and I know many of you do listen to this show in your car as you're on your way to work, and I do appreciate that. A lot of you are picking me up now on YouTube. Also, I just want to throw that out there. You can now watch this show live and in living color, me sitting here recording this podcast, and I can wave to you just like this. Hello. And you can see me sitting here with the headphones on, sitting in front of the microphone, and talking to you about, you know, your networks and all things connected. Again, you can check that out. It is at 42 Technoman. That's the number 4, the number 2, Technoman. I don't know. I picked that a long time ago. Obviously, I was 42 years old, so it was a while ago. Today, we're going to talk about managing distribution lists in a hybrid Exchange Online Office 365 environment. Wow, that's a mouthful. Now, with that said, we got to know how we can do that. Now, if you don't know what a distribution list is, well, stick around. I'm going to explain that to you. And we're going to do that right now. We might as well do it at the top of the show so you understand what we're talking about. A distribution list is just that. It's a list of email addresses, and you may have something like a distribution list for everybody in your company. So if you're that CIO out there and you're working at this and saying, look, I want to be able for the CEO to send an email to everybody in the company, well, that could be a distribution list. It can simply be company, at, and then your domain name. When you do that, it will go to a distribution list of everybody in that list. It's almost like a big contact list that you can create, right? Well, we want to talk tonight how to manage that distribution list and be able to move that into the Office 365 environment. Because we don't want you to have to work really, really hard to migrate to the Office 365. You should be able to migrate your current Exchange server and be able to migrate that up to the cloud, right? And let them handle everything. Now let's get started here. So Microsoft has done a great job in ensuring that hybrid Exchange Online Office 365 tenants have almost all of the features and functionality of the on-premise Exchange server deployments without the need for running and maintaining their own servers. However, there's still one major gap companies consistently run into as they move their hybrid Exchange Online Office 365 environment. And that is their distribution list management. In a hybrid Exchange Online Office 365 environment, DLs, that's short for distribution list, that's what we're going to use here, is DLs, are created on-premise, and they're synchronized with the Azure Active Directory. Now, the Azure Active Directory through DirSync, so that the users with mailboxes in Exchange Online can use those DLs. However, Exchange Online users can't manage their own DLs because DirSync doesn't support the write back of DLs from Office 65 to the on-premise Active Directory forest. Okay, that's a mouthful. So let's break that down just a little bit and try to explain that a little bit of that to you. So what they're saying is, If your user is sitting in the office and they're working on a distribution list in their contact list, and they build a distribution list, and again, if they're in your office environment, the DirSync, the D-I-R-S-Y-N-C, the directory sync, will sync that up to the Office 365. But if they're on Office 365, so if they're at home and they're creating a distribution list, it will not sync back to your Active Directory forest. So you're going to have to get this out there to your users and make sure people understand that syncing policy. So they have to be on-premise to create their DLs, and then it will sync up to the cloud. Exchange has supported the delegation of DL management to users for several versions now. So it comes as a bit of a shock that IT departments, when they find out that they have to manage DLs again. There are several solutions to this problem, which fall into two categories. Move the DLs to the Azure AD so that the Exchange Online users can manage them through Outlook. This can be accomplished through DL migration. Find a way for Exchange Online users to manage on-premise DLs by using Forefront Identity Manager, DS Query, or a PowerShell script, and can provide a way for users to do so. Although none of these solutions will get DL management to work the way it used to, it's the hopes of this writer that the solutions will fit your needs. Now let's talk first about DL management. To move DLs to Azure AD, you can migrate your DLs from your on-premise AD forest to the Azure AD. As mentioned previously, users with mailboxes in Office 365 can't modify DLs that are synchronized with DirectSync or DirSync because DirSync doesn't support a write-back of DLs from Office 365 to the on-premise AD forest. The solution solves a problem by creating new DLs in Azure AD that users with mailboxes in Office 365 will be able to modify. In your organization, or if your organization is going to stay in a hybrid configuration, and we're going to talk about in a little while why we shouldn't do that, with some mailboxes in Office 365 and some mailboxes in an on-premise AD Forest, there's a downside to the solution. The on-premise users won't be able to use or modify their migrated DLs. In addition, if you ever decide to move back to an on-premise Exchange environment from Office 65, there's no easy way to migrate those DLs back to your on-premise AD Forest, AD being Active Directory. If you're moving all your mailboxes into Office 365, you have a limited number of DLs to move, there might be a workable solution. If the plan is to maintain mailboxes on-premise, or if you have a large number of DLs, the solution turns into more trouble than it's worth. I don't know how many companies out there use DLs, distribution list. We allow our users to manage their own. This way, it keeps the IT department out of that whole situation where, you know, somebody will call you and say, look, we want to create a list for everybody in the payroll department. Can you create a payroll DL and put all these email addresses in there? Well, it's easier and it's less time consuming for you as the technologist or your limited IT staff to just allow them to create those in their own contact groups. Now, if they do that on your Exchange server, and again, you're going to the Office 365 environment, you do have to move those for them. They can't move them on their own. But if they're just doing it on their desktop Outlook client, and, you know, I would just allow them to maintain them if they're using Outlook on their desktops. So that's something to think about. Let's talk a little bit about Forefront Identity Manager. You can use the Forefront Identity Manager to provide Exchange Online users the ability to manage their on-premise DLs. On the upside, Forefront Identity Manager gives users a nice graphical interface for managing DLs that's similar to the interface users have become accustomed to in Outlook. On the downside, Forefront Identity Manager is expensive to purchase. Depending on how you buy it, the licensing is going to be thousands of dollars. You also need to consider the cost of the server, the hardware, and the most important part of this conversation, the IT staff, to configure and maintain the solution. As a result, few, if any, organizations are going to use or going to find user DL management important enough to justify the new deployment of Forefront Identity Manager. If your organization already has Forefront Identity Manager deployed, this is a nice added use for the solution. I don't know any companies out there, and I know, you know, my limited clientele that I have out, they don't use Forefront Identity Manager. Of course, they are not using an in-house Exchange server. We do have one with the small business server that does use Exchange, but, you know, it's a limited amount of people. I usually work for smaller clients, so this would be something for a major deployment, such if you work for maybe Comcast, or if you work for a big organization like United Steel Corporation, some affiliation with a big major corporation. This might be a bonus for you to do. And most of those corporations can afford to buy this stuff. So, you know, you can roll this the Forefront Identity Manager out if you feel you want to do that. Again, remember, we talked about the time and the presence it's going to take for your IT staff to do this. If you're in a large organization, I would tell you to hire an Exchange specialist. And there's even Exchange engineers out there. If you really need to really build this out, you can probably pick yourself, you know, find a nice company that has some engineering people with their Exchange, and maybe let them use their expertise to help you roll this out. This isn't going to be something you're going to want to roll out on your own. And this is definitely not something that you're going to want to roll out for a small organization. It's just not cost efficient to do so. Let's talk about DS Query. A DS Query is a command line tool that has been around for some time. It can provide Exchange Online users the ability to manage on-premise DLs. However, most users won't find it easy to manage DLs with this tool. However, a couple commands are illustrated to this point. Now, you can look at the show notes for this string because the DS query string is pretty powerful, but you know, you're going to have to build this string. What I would suggest if you're going to use a DS query is write a VBS script around the DS query and allow your users to have that on your desktop or whatever, and they can run that and it can actually synchronize or move around their DLs or distribution lists. Now, it says here the first command shows the member of the DL named Sales East. All right, that's the DL group. The second command shows all the MEL-enabled DLs in the Active Directory forest. Most Exchange Online users are going to be very unhappy if you tell them they need to run this command like this to manage their DLs. So again, I never tell my users, I never lay out a script and say, look, here's the command you have to type in. Folks, we are the power users. We are the groovers and the shakers of the technology world. We're the ones that make it work. And the users are the ones that use this stuff day in and day out. They use it for stuff like CAD drawings. Those aren't techie people. They use it for, and believe it or not, I've met programmers. I've known programmers. I had to help build computers for them because they don't know what's inside of it. They're not tech oriented. We are the mover and shakers. We are the ones that move the information around. We are the controllers and the keepers of the data. They are the creators of the data. And if you remember that, if you keep that clear in your head, it's going to make your job a lot more straightforward. If at any time you think that you should be the creator of the data, then you need to change your role in the company. You know, you don't want to be the mover and the shaker and the keeper of the data and the maker. Right? We don't want to be the maker. We want to be the keeper and the shaker. Anyway, let's move on, move up, and move out here. Now, you can do this with the PowerShell script, and I would recommend this because I love scripts. Everybody listening to the show, watching me on YouTube, you know that I love scripts. Anytime we can write a script, put it on the user's desktop, they can double-click it, give them permissions to that script, you know, full admin or local admin privileges to run that script, then you would do that. And you don't have to give them full admin privileges on their local computer. We don't want to do that because you tend to get a lot of stuff on a computer you don't really want on a computer. But what you want to be able to do is you want to be able to allow them to run a script. Now, this is figure one says it's entering the name of the Exchange server. If you want to make life a little easier for your Exchange Online users, you can modify the script. First, find the following lines at the top of the script. Exchange server equals read host, and then you enter the name of your Exchange server. Here's a tidbit of information for you. If your DNS is not set up properly, and how many times have I talked to you about DNS, right? If your DNS is not set up properly, you will not be able to resolve the name of your Exchange server. This is very, very critical to know how to do. So many people out there I've met running networks, or they call me to do some consulting for them, say, Jack, look, we can't find our server name on the network. And I always trace it back to they didn't put it as an A record in their DNS server. So you just simply put it as an A record, right? And put the IP address of the Exchange server. Now you can type the Exchange server name and it will resolve back to the actual Exchange server by using the name. The IP address isn't going to get it in these scripts, so you have to be able to resolve names. The next you're going to do is a write host. It's going to say connecting to Exchange server, and then your session. You will create a session, and then you will do a authentication across the PowerShell. Now, again, I'm not going to read all this to you because I did have a gentleman email me a while back and said, Jack, if you read step-by-step, it doesn't work. So I'm not going to read step-by-step for these. That's why I'm putting these links in the show notes, because then you can go, you can read this article for yourself, and you can use these, just you can copy and paste these, make the changes you need to in the script. The whole scripts are in this write-up, and then you can see how it runs. You can make it work for you in your environment. So anyway, it's a Windows PowerShell scripting. And it's going to come up and it's going to ask you to, it's going to say display list of distribution groups, display members of the distribution group, allow users to a distribution group or add users, remove users from a group, delete the distribution group, or create a new distribution group, or number 7 is exit. When you're running PowerShell, your users are going to be a little bit thrown off, because the reason I say that is a user is not used to seeing a DOS-based window. They're not used to seeing ANSI graphics, you know, the stuff that I grew up on. They're not used to seeing text-based prompts, right? They're used to seeing pretty windows. And if you're a, you know, programmer, they're a C programmer or any programmer working with Visual Studio, I would imagine you could write this and you can make it a really, really pretty window. Maybe I'll try to do that later. Maybe I'll try to write this up and give it away to you guys for free for listening to the show. Maybe. I'm not promising anything. But if you write it up and you can bury all those commands into your Visual Studio program, I think you can make a really, really pretty little program that would make it really easy for users to understand. And then what you're going to do, though, is you're going to run this script and you're going to do one of those commands. There's 6 commands, 7 being exit. And you're going to be able to actually take that and use that information for your user and let your user manage your own DL groups. Now, don't overlook the DL management. There are many things to consider when planning a migration to Office 365, and DL management is one facet that's fairly easy to overlook. I hope that it's been pretty easy and pretty been able to clarify these options for DL management and make your migration a little bit easier. Let's just talk now just for a few minutes of some thoughts that I have about Office 365. Now, being a new Office 365 user and, you know, coming from the Google Apps world and kind of living in that world for, I've been in Google Apps now for about 7 years. We've been embracing and using Google Apps and expanding upon it every single day. They keep expanding upon it every day. But if you're an Office shop, and I tell them at work that Office is still very alive and well, I don't know if everybody in the world has to know how to use Microsoft Word or Excel or PowerPoint, but I tell you for sure, if you get a job in an office environment, if you work for a law firm, if you work for medical, anywhere in the medical billing departments, or if you work for a major company, we talked about U.S. Steel, they are using Microsoft Office. It is one of the staples out there. And, you know, I'm not trying to sell you anything. I'm just trying to explain that to you. Now, recently, I made some statements. I picked up some tablets. I've been playing a lot with tablets lately. And the reason is, at least I explained it to my wife this way, I wanted to buy the tablets because I wanted mobile. I wanted the mobile ability to manage and control my servers without having to sit in front of a desktop all the time. So if you're out, if you're moving around, it's nice to have that 7-inch tablet, and it's nice to have a 10-inch tablet. And, you know, even the iPads, we have iPads in the house. We do, you know, we use Apple iPads, and there's a lot of nice clients on there for managing your servers. But I thought, wouldn't it be cool to have a Windows platform? And what it's been helping me with, I've been kind of, okay, you might shoot me for this, but I've been embracing Windows 8.1. On a touchscreen, it's really not that bad. It's pretty stable, seems to work well. I never really have any crashes yet on them. And I got the 7-inch Toshiba Encore tablet. Those are selling off for $100. I mean, you can't beat it. Yeah, the graphics is not, it doesn't have the best graphics processor in the thing, and the screen is not, you know, super HD resolution, but it does work pretty well. It's a pretty stable little system. And then I just bought what's called a NextBook. It's NextBook. And you pick those up. I actually picked this up at Walmart. And I tell everybody, especially during the holiday season, don't buy your computer where you buy your toilet paper and your motor oil. It just doesn't seem right to me. But they do have some pretty nice products that come through there from some vendors out there. And if you look at the NextBook, it's NextBook. It's a 10.1-inch. It's a tablet. I should have brought it for the show. I could have showed it actually on the video here. You can look it up on the internet. Check them out. Check it out at walmart.com. It was $170. And it's a tablet that has a removable keyboard. It has a full keyboard, and it just magnetizes right on top of the keyboard. It also runs a full Windows 8.1 Professional. So, you know, because I was looking at buying the latest tablet, you know, out there, and the Surface Pro 3, but it's a lot of money. And you have to also buy the keyboard. Just to buy that to have Windows on a tablet, probably is not a good idea. Although I hear it's amazing, immaculate hardware. I did hear that. This thing here seems like it's pretty amazing also. But I believe it's a tablet, and I believe Asus has renamed their branding. Because I found a video on YouTube of the same type of tablet that is made by Asus. That's A-S-U-S. But this tablet has been rebranded Nextbook. And they even have a website, so you can check them out. But what I was telling you about that for is when you buy these tablets, they're coming with the full 8.1 Pro, and they're coming with free Office 365 for 1 year, and you can download the Office programs, and they're going to be on that computer forever, as far as I can tell. I don't see how they would disappear on you after the year if you don't pay for it. You would just lose the online component to the Office 365. That's what started getting me into the Office 365 realm and trying to learn a little bit and pick up on things and find out how it works. I seriously believe in my mind, the way my mind works, that more and more people are going to go to online components. The reason they're going to go to the online components is because it's always there and always available. As long as you have an internet connection, you don't have to have Office loaded on your computer. And if you're using their, you know, their cloud-based services, then you would also be able to have your documents with you wherever you go all the time. That's good and bad. I'll tell you about that in a minute. But some thoughts and benefits of using Office 365 is mainly, first of all, is we're talking about Exchange, is you no longer have to manage your Exchange servers. It said earlier, maybe you want a hybrid. You want, you know, on-premise Exchange server, and you also want to have that online, that cloud-based 365 server. I vote no, okay? A definite no. Don't do that. When you decide to migrate to the cloud, migrate it to the cloud. Microsoft has more money than your company will ever be able to make, I believe. They're still one of the richest companies out there. And they are providing these services to you at a very, very low cost. If you do a TCO, right, total cost of ownership, and you push that total cost of ownership, figure everything out Microsoft wants to charge you, and then go back and figure everything out it will cost you to build your Exchange servers, maintain your Exchange servers, look at your IT support staff, also look at supplying the internet to those servers. You want a 99.9% uptime on that Exchange server. Email is critical, even though today it's starting to get pushed back to text messaging and instant messaging and whatever other kind of messaging we have. It's still critical. People rely on email every day for their business. And you also have to think about, take the TCO from Microsoft, from Office 365, and take that same idea and say, look, if I want to build my server and then have remote servers and server farms and you can't touch what they're doing. That's what pushed us to the Google Apps 7 years ago, was we can't build enough backup and redundancy in our system to maintain. We used to supply our own email out of our own rack, and it was sometimes it was a nightmare. I mean, if your IP address gets blacklisted for your email, you are devastated, absolutely devastated. It's easy to get on a blacklist. It is horribly impossible to get off a blacklist. I mean, it's almost, when I ran my ISP, we had gotten blacklisted. And the reason is because when you run an ISP, you have a lot of clients that you don't know what they're doing every day on the internet, right? They're on there. Well, they started to use our email server as a spam server. And this is early on. I mean, I had my internet service probably 15 years ago now. But maybe 10. Yeah, about 15 years ago. So even back then, people were learning about spam and learning how to, you know, use the systems for no good. And we got blacklisted. The only way we fixed it was we actually picked up another outside IP address, changed our MX records, and then we were okay. But when we're on that blacklist, we called every company possible, but there are so many companies that maintain those lists that you kind of get stuck. So with Office 365, Microsoft is not going to let their servers get blacklisted. It's just not going to happen. And you're going to be relatively safe out there. I mean, they're going to make sure that you're humming along and moving every day. Next of all, you no longer have to maintain Outlook web access. My wife and the company she works with, I know I watch her get on her email, and they have Outlook web access, which is beautiful. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful program, and it gives your users that same ability that we're giving our users with the Google Apps Mail, because that was the first thing they liked. They can get their mail from any device, anywhere they're at. They don't have to have a desktop client anymore. Matter of fact, in our organization, we got rid of the desktop clients. Nobody uses Outlook. Nobody uses, what's the other? There's other mail programs out there. You use Thunderbird and all those free ones. Or on the Mac, you know, we used to use Mail on the Mac. We don't have to maintain four or five different clients anymore. You know, when you run an IT staff of two, there's other important things you have to take care of, like keeping computers running, keeping, you know, people happy with their technology. We don't have time to maintain that when you're trying to build a network. You don't want to maintain, well, my Apple Mail doesn't seem to be receiving any mail. We don't want to worry about that. So we moved everybody to the web access. And that's what my wife's company has done also. Even at her office, she uses the Outlook web access client. When you do that, when you start moving your people to that, what's happening is you no longer have to manage all those different clients' PST files, which are horrible to move around, especially if people don't delete their email. You get really, really caught up in all that. So you no longer have to maintain that. Then there's no more calls, and I've gotten these before, no more calls at 3 a.m. from a CEO, and you're all groggy. Yes, sir. Good morning. May we help you? Yeah, I can't get my email. I don't know what I'm doing. It looks like the web access is down. Can you run to the office and reboot the server? Yeah, sure. Let me find my pants. You don't have to worry about that. Microsoft will be taking care of your Office 365 and your web access to the email. Case closed. Perfect solution. Here's another one. You don't have to worry about backing up your Exchange servers. Backing up Exchange servers can be a very daunting task. Yes, there is software out there. There's great software out there you can use to back up your Exchange servers. But you need the server space to back those up. And again, sometimes people just don't like to delete emails. I don't know if we're like, I guess we're all a bit of a hoarder. Now, some of you, and we have a lot of staff members that will, they're happy to tell me, they'll say, look, Jack, I only got four emails in my inbox. And there's nothing else in their inbox. There's nothing, no other email on their computer. They delete them after they're done using them. Me, of course, you might look in there and I might have 4,570 some emails. Maybe at times, well, over the summer, there was 16,000. I cleaned it up. What I'm saying is we are traditionally hoarders. And as we hoard emails, you get to back those up every night, right? It's a redundancy. Even if you're doing incremental backups, you're going to need a heck of a lot of storage. So think about that. No more backup issues. You will gain more redundancy by using Microsoft's server farms than you can ever afford to build. You can't build the redundancy that Microsoft is offering these businesses. Microsoft's in a business for supplying business with business-oriented applications. And a long time ago, Microsoft sat back and they said, look, people aren't really buying Microsoft Office on the desktop anymore. It's kind of limited. You have to be at your desk and you have to be sitting there to get your email and stuff. And that just doesn't make sense. Because they knew they had a hit, right? They had a hit with Hotmail, and they had all these millions of users using Hotmail. And they said, wait, why are the users using Hotmail? Well, it makes really good sense why they're using Hotmail, because it's online. It's always available. And that's a key component to any of this. So that's what you want to think about, using the online resources. But the server farms that Microsoft is providing, you can't build. You're not going to build that. And that was another selling point with me with the Google Apps. We can never build that redundancy that Google is offering us, and they offer it to education for free. Microsoft 365 does charge for education. There's a cost for that. I don't know what it is because I really haven't dug into that side of it. Now, better spam control. Now, I know we used to have great spam control, and if you're looking for spam control for your networks, I have to tell you to look at Barracuda. Barracuda doesn't support these shows. You know, I've never even talked to Barracuda about giving money to sponsor these shows. I just tell you what I've used, and I can tell you it is amazing. We plugged that Barracuda back up, or Barracuda spam server in, and it's just, you know, a box that goes in your rack. It's a hardware appliance. We plugged it in, and we set it up. They tell you how to set up. It's relatively easy. So your email goes into there. It looks at it, gives it a little wash. It cleans it up, and then it dumps the good email into your Exchange server or whatever email server you're using. It doesn't really matter. We used to use a service from IP Switch called iMail. Loved it. I used it when I had my ISP, and I took that with me as I got into the industry and I started working for companies. We started using iMail. I used it all the way up until I switched to Google Apps. I love it. It's a lot easier to understand, and I don't have to be an Exchange engineer to run it. I just very simply set it up and it worked. It has the web access and everything you're looking for. So it's another solution out there, but we are talking about Microsoft. Better spam control. Let Microsoft handle your spam control, right? You don't need to worry about having anything in your rack. And another thing, that's part of the TCO, the total cost of ownership. You don't want to have to supply that. And I know there's a lot of online companies out there that do it now, relatively inexpensive. Take your pick. There's many of them. Now, if you're open to an online office package, you're going to become the instant hero of your company. And I tell you this because that's what I became, the instant hero of my company. Once we explained to our users how to use Google Apps and Google Docs, and it is a little bit more limited than Microsoft Office, but for most solutions, it's pretty good. Folks, I've been playing with Office 365 online because, like I said, I got it free with my tablets. And, you know, I've been playing around with it, trying to embrace it, trying to learn it. And it is pretty close, not perfect, but pretty close to the desktop client. And it allows you to do mostly, you know, all the same kind of stuff you're going to do. And I'm just talking about Word. I haven't really tried the presentation software, the PowerPoint. I haven't tried Excel online. But for Word, it pretty much looks the same. You're going to get in there and do your work. So your users are going to embrace that. This allows your users to work from wherever they are. That's why we do this, mobility. Today's word in technology is mobility. And mobility started out some years ago. We started building mobile ideas, or, you know, when we started handing out laptops to users to go on the road, you hand your CEO a laptop and say, hey, Charlie, go on the road and do your sales pitch to some companies and make us $1 billion. But what happens is when you're sending these CEOs out, they couldn't get back to their email and their desktop stuff. So we had to set what was called VPNs. And we talked on the show about VPNs some time ago, so you can go back and listen to that show. But when you build a VPN, again, you have more breakage points. I don't like the breakage points. I hate when we have to work on stuff and we build things in our networks that can break, that can make the IT staff even more stressed. We have enough stress. We have enough stuff going on in our network. We don't have to introduce new stuff outside of our network that we can't control. Here's one with the VPN you can't control. Your CEO goes on a trip. He's in Beijing, China. Your CEO goes to a hotel. He gets on their wireless. They're supplying him with 0.004 of a meg internet service. It's really horrible. Your CEO tries to connect to the VPN. It says, sorry, not enough bandwidth to connect the VPN. You get a phone call from Beijing, China. You look at the caller ID. You're like, whoo, that's kind of weird. You pick it up and answer it. Hey, Frank, in the tech department, what are you doing down there? I can't get to my VPN. I can't get to my software. I need these documents. Well, again, you're a failure, right? You're not a failure. You did your job. You can't go to Beijing, China and tell them to increase their bandwidth in their hotel. That's not for you to decide. If you supply them with the Office 365, your CEO is going to log on the website. Yeah, it could be slow on his end, but then you just say, hey, their internet's slow. It's not your VPN connection. Everything you're doing in your network is good. All he has to do is get to the Office 365 on the web, get his document, do whatever he wants to do with it. CEO's happy. You get a big Christmas bonus and you're a hero. So hopefully that helps you out a little bit. I want to talk to you a little bit here about my Amazon link. I know all podcasters out there tell you, use my Amazon link, use mine. No, use mine over here. My Amazon link is better than his. That's not true. All podcasters out there are looking to make just a couple dollars here and there where we can. I don't think we're beggars. I mean, we don't sit on the street corner with a tin can, you know, dinging it, ding, ding, ding. Can you give me a quarter? Well, I mean, we're not that kind of beggars. But, you know, it is nice to get a couple dollars back from Amazon every month and say, hey, you know, thanks for putting the word out there to use Amazon. And everybody uses Amazon, right? You're buying all your tech stuff from Amazon anyway. So if you go to my website, tipsfromserverroom.com, you deactivate your ad blocker, because I know all you good techs out there use some kind of ad blocker. Of course you do. You'll see my Amazon link. If you're going to buy anything from Amazon, just click on that link and then make your purchase like you normally would. That gives a few dollars back to the show here. It helps to support the show, and you know, it helps me carry on to bring these podcasts to you. So I do appreciate that anytime you buy anything from Amazon. Now, folks, here's a big one. You've been sitting around thinking, man, I want to migrate everything over to, 2003, server 2003 is going away July 15th of next year. Bye-bye. Now you got to migrate. You want to get everything to Windows Server 2012. Because even if you go to Windows Server 2008 R2, you still may be behind the eight ball a little bit, because they're working on a new server package now. So if you go to 2012, at least you're moving up the ladder. So if you want to learn Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012, or VMware ESXi 5.5 Server from install to administration, and many of you have out there wanted to learn, and many people are signed up for these courses, and I appreciate you coming in there wholeheartedly, and I'm glad that everybody's learning. I've been getting positive feedback from the courses, and everybody's picking up all new stuff. But anyway, you can sign up for the course at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. That's tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Look for the online class link at the top of the page. These courses are self-paced. You watch a video and you take a short quiz. Again, you watch a video and take a quiz. If you get to a quiz question, and you can even open up two tabs. There's a little secret. So on the tab, you have the quiz open. You go, oh, wait, I don't know what Jack said there. Go back to the video, you know, scroll back through it and listen again to see what I said, and then put it on the quiz. It's like an open book test. It's very easy. Most quizzes are anywhere from 3 to 4 questions, very easy to answer. Once you complete that course, I will mail your certificate in the mail. These certificates are suitable for framing, and more, even better than that, these certificates are being used to attach to resumes to get that job you're looking for. Once again, you can sign up for that at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Look at the online class link at the top of the page, click on that, and take one of those courses today. Right now, they're set up as a special price. So there's a special pricing in there. So I would do it right now after you listen to the show. Go over, if you're thinking about taking it, go over and sign up, because the special pricing may not be around for long. Folks, if you celebrate Thanksgiving in your part of the world, and then I hope you make it a very relaxing one. And I'm going to give you a tip tonight. This is a special tip from the show here, from the podcast to you, that can make it even better. This is what I try to do every year. And, you know, my wife kind of leads me to that path of righteousness to do this. Stay away from the keyboard. Turn them computers off. Shut them, not your servers, but shut your workstations down at home. You don't need to remote in. We don't need to work in Active Directory. DNS will be just fine. Your backups are running. Everything's okay. Back away from that keyboard and enjoy some family time this Thanksgiving. You know, give back to that family that gives you so much time to do this job that we all love so much and cherish. Folks, I hope you have a great work week. What's left of it, I know you probably have a short week this week, and I will be back here next Tuesday with another show. Thank you so much for listening, subscribing, and downloading to the shows. I really do appreciate it. And every week when I look at them numbers, the thousands of you out there listening, I'm very humbled to know that you're still hanging in there with the show and picking up some new ideas on your Windows servers and networks. Thanks so much, my friends. I'll talk to you next Tuesday. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and bye for now. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.